Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, the latest science says that your brain's health may be the most powerful indicator of how long you will live. Recently, National Geographic partnered with leading brain expert Dr. Cynthia Green and eminent science writer Michael Sweeney to create Your Best Brain Ever. It's a complete guide and workout for the brain to keep you sharp, improve memory, and boost creativity. And I read yesterday that Alzheimer's kills more Americans than prostate cancer and breast cancer combined. So we definitely want to keep our brains active and healthy. Ultimately, that helps us live more productive lives. My interview with Dr. Cynthia Green on that topic is coming up around 12:40 today. But first, with Autism Awareness Month just around the corner, it's coming up in April, this is the perfect time to shed some light on the never-ending battle for special needs, services, coping mechanisms, family challenges, and we've got a perfect guest in the studio with us today to talk to us about that. She is Stephanie Collins. She's here in the studio with me. She's got a degree in psychology and a degree in nursing. She's worked for approximately 10 years on the medical unit at Seattle Children's Hospital. And she gave up her career to focus on the growing needs of her family. She's a mother of four, and three of those children have special needs, so she knows about what she's talking here. And somewhere in that busy life, she found time to write a book. It's called With Angel's Wings. Stephanie Collins, welcome to the show today.
Thanks, Vicki. Thanks for having me.
We're pleased to have you here. And, you know, everybody's situation is so different and so unique. So we're going to share a lot of your journey today because I think people often can relate or they realize they're not alone. Hey, I'm not the only one going through this. So tell me a little bit about your family. You call her one typical child, I read here. Not normal, typical child.
Yeah.
Even though you say she has somewhat of a princess complex. She's your youngest, right?
Correct.
She's seven. Mm-hmm. And then you have three special needs children. Mm-hmm. So tell us who they are.
So Catherine is 21, and she's autistic. And Sarah is 18, and she has a rare genetic disorder called Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome. And Will is 11, and he has pretty severe ADHD and dyslexia.
Go back to that Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome. I'd never heard of it. It doesn't sound very common.
I had never heard of it either. It is pretty uncommon. When I got the diagnosis, I was told that Sarah was one of a couple of hundred in the country that had it. And so it's a deletion on one of the fourth chromosomes. And I didn't even know that there was anything other than Down syndrome when I got the diagnosis. It was just
right.
All a complete surprise.
Right, right. So you have, I mentioned, you have a degree in nursing, you have a degree in psychology. Did you get those before you had your children?
No. Psychology came, actually, I got that diploma soon after Catherine was born. And the nursing came after Sarah. I figured I'd learned enough on the job training, just parenting, and I had enough interest in it that that I thought I'd explore it.
Mm-hmm. But I would imagine working full time and taking care of two special needs children was a nightmare.
Yeah.
I would imagine it was really difficult. I mean, people with typical children, as you call them, you know, have enough issues.
Mm-hmm. It was very difficult. One of the Sarah can't be left alone, of course, and she can't just go to a daycare center.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the nice things about nursing is it's a 24-hour job. And so because someone always had to be home, my husband could work 9 to 5. And so I exclusively worked 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. And over the years, it was just the lack of sleep really, really wore me down.
Yeah, I'm sure. And so, you know, when I was reading this, I wondered if, you know, you had two special needs children and then you had a gap. Will was, there's an 8-year gap before Will was born. Mm-hmm. Did you have trepidation about having more children?
Well, yes and no. So I jumped into a new gene pool, so to speak. I divorced my first husband, the father to both of my oldest girls, and married my forever husband, Matt. And I really didn't expect any problems. Catherine is the spitting image of her paternal grandmother, and so I kind of figured out where that all came from with the autism. And Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome, it's a fluke, and so I obviously very rare, so the chances of me having another one were astronomically, you know, against that. So I really didn't expect any problems or any issues, and I had Will, and infancy went great. But as he was, you know, became a toddler and issues started to pop up, that took some real, that was hard. That was hard to accept. I was just, you know, what did I do in a former life to deserve this? You know,
right, it was hard. Right. So, you know, you'd think having the nursing degree, having the psychology degree would help you. But at the end of the day, you're human.
Exactly.
So talk to me about some of the biggest challenges that as a woman, as a mother, that you've experienced.
Well, in the early days, it was a lot of the physical stuff. You know, Sarah was born with 7 heart defects, and so she was in severe heart failure for a while until we could get her heart straightened out. She had a severe seizure disorder, and that was really, really rough on us. But then she had a severe sleep disorder, and so we were monitoring her sleep habits, and she would go as long as 28-hour stretches, sleeping as few as 3 hours.
Wow.
In no longer than 20-minute segments, 20
oh, wow.
minutes to a half
wow.
hour. So it was all the physical stuff. But with Catherine and Will, a lot of it is remembering even myself and dealing with those around them that are not remembering that their disabilities are hidden, that they look quote-unquote normal, but they're going to disappoint you if you're expecting normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real hardship.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you divorced your first husband, mm-hmm. father of the eldest 2 mm-hmm. children, and are now with your forever husband, Matt, I think you said his name was.
Yes.
So how do you both have time for each other with all of this going on? And how do you keep things alive between you?
Right. I wish I had a real answer to
that. You'd
I think
be
it's
a
just...
billionaire. If you had a Panacea, you would be a billionaire.
Yeah, I think it's just I was blessed and lucky to just find the right person. You know, we don't have a lot of time to ourselves, and there have been times where we've had to really force the issue and make sure that we could find a sitter to just go to a movie together, that type of thing. We've been on one vacation together in the 11 or 12 years that we've been together, mm-hmm. and so that's hard. I miss that part of my life that I just can't have. But we really enjoy our time together with the kids. It's great. But you know, special needs, they definitely take their tolls on families. It took less than 6 months for it to break up my previous marriage, and that's something that a lot of families face. So not only are they dealing with the stress of their special needs child, but now they're single on top of it. It's real hard.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that a minute, because I think that's important. Your book is a novel, but mm-hmm. it's based loosely on your experiences.
Actually, it's 100%.
100%.
Yeah,
you just changed
just,
the names.
Just changed
okay,
names.
I wasn't
mm-hmm.
quite sure how detailed there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then it's true to say then that the first husband was really not involved, didn't want to be involved at all in this.
Correct.
And so that's quite a shocker when you've married someone and are setting up a life together and he doesn't want any part of the child.
Right, right.
So what was that like for you at that time?
Oh, horrible. I still hold a little bit of resentment. I've definitely gotten over it over the years mm-hmm. quite a bit, but it's so unfair.
Yeah.
You know, I had to step up. I'm the mother. I had to step in and do things that, you know, holding my daughter down for a couple of hours at a time during IV attempts and dealing with, you know, a 5-hour seizure, that type of, who wants to do that? Nobody does. But
right,
you're the
right.
parent. You have to do it. You have to step in. Well, apparently not everybody does. Some can
right.
just decide, I'm going to walk away.
Yeah. And so. I know at one point he in the book, he decided to quit his job
mm-hmm.
and move to California.
Mm-hmm.
And you were concerned about, you know, am I still going to get any child support to take, you know, physically he's not there and never right. has been, but at least, right. you know, had a little money off him.
Exactly.
So what happened there?
He wasn't giving me, I believe at that time he dropped the child, he decided to go back to college. And so he dropped his child support payments down to $155 a month. And I, of course, couldn't work. I was in the hospital with Sarah just about three quarters of every month was spent in the hospital
wow.
with her.
Mm-hmm.
I tried working. It just wasn't working out. And so it took lots of scrambling and lots of luck. And luckily, we were able to get through.
Yeah. Now, she's 18 now, and she's still fed exclusively on a feeding tube?
Correct.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you really can't go very far at all, do you?
No. No, she doesn't really tolerate being away from home. She gets easily overwhelmed and so forth. So we pretty much have to stick close to home.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. My guest here is Stephanie Collins. Her book is called With Angel's Wings. And as you just heard, it's a novel, but it is based on her own experiences, 100% her own experiences. She just changed the names here. And when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the kind of help that special needs families are looking for. And I know Stephanie's not an expert on this. We'll be following up later in the April on with some experts on this. But from a personal perspective, I want to see what it's like trying to get help out in the real world when you're dealing with the situation that Stephanie's just disclosed to us. So please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Conversations Live is giving away books, from New York Times best-selling fiction to the latest from innovative thought leaders in business and psychology. To find out where, when, and how, like us on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and look out for posts titled Book Giveaway.
Tell your friends, the place to be is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Stephanie Collins. Her book is called With Angel's Wings. And after 10 years as a registered nurse on the medical unit at Seattle's Children's Hospital, Stephanie left to focus on her children. Three of her children have special needs. She also has a degree in psychology, and I'm sure that's helped you somewhat along the way.
In theory.
So let's talk a little bit about, there was a great article in the Seattle Times. There's also one, I think this was in a Milwaukee newspaper, but I thought this one really highlighted some of the issues that parents face. this particular article talks about the scholarship. So let's just back up a second and talk first of all about there are funds out there or supposed to be made available for families with special needs. But as you know, I was doing my research, I realized number one, first of all, just how individual those needs are. And you just can't put it under a blanket statement or a blanket policy. And then number two, even though a family may have been approved for funds and they say, yes, you qualify for these funds, guess what? Washington State doesn't have them in the kitty. So what's going on? I mean, have you experienced this yourself?
Oh, absolutely. We moved here from New Hampshire in 2001. And in January of 2001, I came out here and said, these are the services that my girls are receiving in New Hampshire. Can I expect similar services? And they said, absolutely, come on out. And so we moved out here in June, and I called up the Department of Developmental Disabilities and said, okay, where do I need to sign up my paperwork? And they said, oh, yeah, about that. So we just got audited by the feds, and everything is frozen. We can add you to our wait list, but I'll tell you right now, it's more of a wish list, and don't expect any services at all, at least until adulthood. For your children.
And what do they count as adulthood?
Well, 18.
18, mm-hmm. Okay.
And at the time, Sarah was maybe 6.
Wow. And so you'd got 2 at that point.
Right.
And are 18. So where do parents go then? What are they supposed to do? Because as you've already told us, and you were telling me in the break, you'd love to travel, but you just can't while Sarah is living.
Right. Well, now that we live in an age of social media, it's so much easier because you can reach out to parents. You know, look at Sarah's disorder, Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome, pretty rare. And so not very likely that I'm going to meet other people right in my neighborhood that that can relate to what I'm going through or that I can ask, you know, what can I expect with this? What can I expect with that? But in the wonderful world of Facebook, I can reach right out to those folks. And as far as our local community and what it has to offer, there's some great parents groups out there that can definitely help steer you in whatever direction could possibly give you some assistance.
So can you name a couple of those groups that you work, you personally have benefited from?
Well, there's the kind of all-encompassing organization is the ARC of King County, and they have a lot of services underneath them, like parent-to-parent. Parent-to-parent coordinator is someone that can kind of help match up parents of kids with similar needs, that type of thing.
And sometimes isn't that all you need? You need someone who understands,
absolutely,
hey, this is what I go through from the time I wake up through the time I go to bed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Someone who gets it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so who else have you worked with?
Well, there's the school district. They can be really helpful too, depending on the school district you're in. And there's the King County Parent Coalition, I believe, or Family Coalition, and they're also involved with ARC of King County. And so, just parents in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm glad you mentioned school districts because one of the things that raised during the preparation for this show was why are special needs scholarships necessary and are they necessary? And I didn't really understand. I don't have children, so I'm not in the school system, so to speak. So I didn't realize that they had scholarships for special needs. And so I read quite a bit about why are they necessary and having read what I read, I would say they're definitely necessary. Mm-hmm. There was a very good article in, I think it was the Milwaukee paper that I just referred to, by Susan Giamo. And one of the things I took away from this article was, you can't lump special needs under the label special needs because every single situation is so unique. Every single situation is so different. So her point in writing this article was that some other parents with special needs had written in and said, hey, we don't need this scholarship to send our children to a special school because they do really well in the public school system. Mm-hmm. But her children did not. Talk to us a little bit about your perspective on that, if you would.
Sure. I think that if something like this had been in place for me back when I was in New Hampshire, it would have been a godsend. So Catherine, I don't even know that she had not gotten her autism diagnosis yet. She was still undiagnosed, but it was very obvious that there were issues and she was getting testing and so on and so forth. But then, you know, in the world of special needs, you learn all sorts of terms that you've never heard of before, like two standard deviations below the mean, stuff like that, that determines what types of services you're going to get. And unfortunately, Catherine, quote unquote, tested too well. Everyone knew that she needed the services, but they couldn't give them to her. And so, meanwhile, Catherine was coming home from kindergarten every day bawling, saying, "The kids are hurting my ears." She was so auditorily oversensitive that she just couldn't handle the noise level of the public school. And so I looked around and found a very, very small private school that was much more appropriate for her. But of course, I was a single, very poor parent, and that was a real challenge to be able to keep her in there. So this would have been perfect for her to help fund getting her somewhere that she needed to be.
Right. And, you know, I read in this, and I don't know if this is true of every state, because I know every state is different, but that a school can decide not to take a child. And so they veto it, even though they've been told they have to. But they can still take the funding for that child.
Right. Yeah. It's everything's so tricky. You just that's why it's so important to reach out to other families that you can chat with, because everybody has their own special interests in these things, and so fighting for your child is it's a confusing world out there.
Yeah, and Susan, who wrote this article, said that you know, open enrollment applications from special needs families for the 2012-13 school year were denied at a rate of 42%, mm-hmm. which is something that opponents of special needs scholarships fail to mention. They fail to mention those denial stats and what's, you know, what's a parent supposed to do, and what, you know, how's a child supposed to get education and help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so hard, you know. Things like this happen where you get denied for different things. And unfortunately, they're counting on the fact that you don't have the time or energy or resources to fight it, because you're too busy parenting your special needs child.
Right, right, right. So what would you like to see change in an ideal world?
Oh. In an ideal world, I think the biggest thing that we need to start with is understanding a better understanding of what special needs families are going through. And that's one of the reasons I wrote that I published with Angel's Wings, is because, and that was why I tried to be 100% honest about exactly what happened with us, because I think that if people can better understand what these families are facing,
right,
then we can start from there. But It's a tough life, and so that's where it needs to start.
Right, right. And you found out, just looking at the book jacket here, but you found out 13 days after giving birth that your baby had. Go ahead, tell us.
Yeah. So she was born. She was smaller. She was 5 pounds 10 ounces at birth. The doctor said, "No, that's fine, no problem. Go ahead, take her home." So I did, and she wasn't eating, and I was concerned that she would get dehydrated. So before her first well baby checkup, I called up the doctor and said, "You know, I'm concerned here." He said, "Bring her in," and then I proceeded to hold her down for 2 hours of IV pokes for an emergency transport to an intensive care nursery. He had heard a heart murmur. Later that day, she was diagnosed with 7 heart defects. And, of course, then the question was, why does she have these heart defects? And they brought the geneticist in. And a few weeks after that, she got her diagnosis of Wolff-Hirschhorn syndrome.
Right, right. So, you know, you're sitting here with a smile. And it's a genuine smile. I wish the listeners could see you, because you certainly have a lot on your plate, and a lot of people would allow themselves to be weighed down. But you stepped into the studio here and were bubbly and bright. So what advice do you give to parents who are dealing with this from your heart?
Sure. from my heart. Rule number one is focus on now, focus on today, get through today. Don't worry about the future because everything will probably change before you get there anyway. And do what you can to laugh. You have to. If you take it too seriously, you're just going to get mired right down in. And be thankful for the good because there's enough bad to, you know, to round it out. So just be thankful for the sun outside today.
Right, right. And what about your husband? You know, he sounds like an amazing man. You had two special needs children when you guys got married.
Exactly.
So what is it that makes him so unique for you?
Oh boy, everything about me is unique. Yeah, he's the one who taught me the importance of laughter and the importance, you know, you have to have faith, whether it's in God or yourself or your spouse or your family, whatever it is that you need to have faith. You need to have faith in something that will just get you through to tomorrow, that, you know, tomorrow will be a better day. And he was the first thing that I could have faith in when I was going through those really rough days. And it's bloomed out from there. Now I have much more faith in myself. But it's just so important to be able to laugh, to try to take things as lightly as possible.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So, and then the big question, of course, is how the heck did you find time to write a book? I know that you began journaling very early on.
That was it, yeah. Of course, there wasn't a whole lot of sleep happening, so why not write while I wasn't sleeping anyway? And it started off as just a therapeutic measure. I just wrote things down to help. I was really hard on myself for how I was dealing with different things. And as I wrote it down, I thought, oh, well, I was going through this too. Oh, but this was happening too. Well, of course I was. No wonder I was acting this way. Everything was crazy. And as I was writing that, there were a lot of nurses and therapists in the house for the girls, and they would read what I was writing, and they said things like, you know, wow, you know, I'm dealing with this mom right now that I really wish that she could read this because I think that she's going through the same thing, but she doesn't feel comfortable opening up about that. And so enough people said that I thought, well, okay, if this will help someone else understand that, oh, I'm not the only one feeling this way or I'm not the only one going through this, then it will be well worth it.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And so what do you want people to know about, I like the dedication here, this is dedicated to my McHaggis. Your honey. What would you like listeners to know about the book?
That it is 100% raw and real. And if you don't know anything about life with special needs kids, then it's a pretty good window into that life. And if you do know something about it, then it's something that, you know, misery loves company. And it's someone that you can, you know, it's a book that you can go, oh, okay, yes, yes, she gets this. I felt this way too. So
how long did it take you to write?
I think I started around the time by the time Sarah was a year or two old, I had started writing it then and just finished maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So it took a while.
Well, good. I'm glad that you came in today and talked with us and shared your personal story with us. Not easy, I'm sure, to, the book, as you said, tells everything.
My heart's on my sleeve.
Your heart is on your sleeve. But you know what? That's where we learn. We learn from people who share like that. And I'm just reading something on creativity. And one of those things they talk about is you've got to share, share your experiences. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for being with us. Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
If anyone would like to continue the conversation, they can go to the website www.withangelswings.net. And there is an epilogue to the book there. There's pictures that go with every one of the chapters of the book. But there's an Ask the Author forum, so we can certainly continue talking.
Well, lovely. I had one final question. I forgot to ask this. Why with angel's wings?
Oh, it's kind of an inside joke.
That's why I wanted you to share it. So
it's a quote from the book describing a stuffed cow
that had angel's wings.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
That was given to you by your
husband.
By your husband. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Stephanie Collins, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Listeners can find out more about Stephanie's book at withangelswings.net. And as she said, if you want to continue the conversation, then get in touch with her. The book is called With Angels' Wings. And please do stay with us when we come back. We're going to be talking about how to keep your brain well and alert. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
All day, all night, angels watching over me, yeah. All night and all day, angels watching over me.
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year illegally. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor with a desire to preserve living space for wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust does just that. Works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the fabulous Clean Up the Mess people at BioClean, we cover the world of animals. This week, March 30th, it's Shelter, Rescue Sanctuary, and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll check on the birds at Mollywood Avian Sanctuary and at Macaw Rescue and Sanctuary. We'll find out about the horses at All Breed Equine Rescue. Plus, we'll talk with Robert from Seattle Dog Spot, hoping for good news that the OAS dogs have all been rescued. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL. Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Next week on Conversations Live, sharing powerful stories of his own and his patients, Dr. Daniel Gottlieb helps us develop faith in ourselves and change habitual ways of looking at the world. We'll explore effective techniques to calm unquiet minds, enhance relationships, and embrace the most precious commodity of all, love. That's all coming next Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for upcoming show details and podcasts.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And in this segment, we are going to bring you an interview that I did a couple of weeks ago, but we haven't played it for you yet. I sat down with Dr. Cynthia Green, who's a leading expert on the brain, and chatted with her about how we can keep our brains healthy. And she partnered with, let me just get his name here. Michael S. Sweeney is the director of graduate studies in the E.W. Scripps School of Journalism at Ohio University. He's the author of several books for National Geographic, including Brain, The Complete Mind and Brain Works. And together with Michael, Dr. Cynthia Green partnered with National Geographic to produce this book, Your Best Brain Ever, A Complete Guide and Workout. Stay sharp, improve memory, and boost creativity. And as I said at the top of the hour, the latest science shows that our brain's health may be the most powerful indicator of how long we will live. So Dr. Cynthia Green is a clinical psychologist. She's an author and leading expert on memory wellness and brain health. She's appeared on Good Morning America, The Early Show, 2020, and has been in the pages of publications such as Time, Newsweek, and the New York Times. And we're going to bring that interview to you right now. Dr. Cynthia Green on Your Best Brain Ever. Well, Dr. Green, I want to thank you for being with us to talk about this book. It's a great book, Your Best Brain Ever. Tell us, first of all, how this came about. You wrote it with science writer Michael Sweeney.
Yes, so I had the opportunity in speaking with National Geographic to talk about doing a book on brain health. They've done some wonderful books on the brain in terms of the brain science and things like perception. And Mike Sweeney is a journalism professor who writes for them often on the brain. And so it was a great opportunity to partner with the National Geographic approach to, you know, they take stuff that's scientifically complicated and provide us with a way of understanding it that's practical and current, and with Mike, who's done so much great writing for them.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I really loved about the book. It's very accessible, and you break out all of your what you call brain boosters into easy read sections, so I don't have to read pages and pages. I can get a quick tip at a glance. And I want to look at some of those later in the segment. But let's begin with lifestyle factors, because we all know that we can fight or help fight physical decline, and there are certain things that we can do to help our mental decline also. So what is it we do that is most likely to lower our memory potential? What is it that's harmful to us?
So I'd say that based on the science, and I think that really we are so blessed because this is really an age of brain health. We know so much more now than we ever have before. The kinds of things that we need to do is get engaged across the full spectrum of wellness. So when we do things that we know aren't healthy, so for example, if we don't get enough sleep, if we don't eat well and treat our bodies well in terms of maintaining a healthy weight and getting a lot of aerobic exercise, if we don't balance stress well, if we don't deal with emotional health challenges, and if we don't stay engaged intellectually, then those kinds of things are going to take a toll on our brain, both in terms of our everyday performance as well as in terms of our long-term health.
Right, and we also want to look at good nutrition, lots of antioxidants, as we know, in a good diet. But I want to look specifically at supplements, because we hear so much about brain supplements, and I wonder how much good they actually do. A couple of them, well, the one that I'm thinking of right now that pops into my mind is jellyfish. I've been hearing a lot about this lately.
So that's interesting. It's the first I've heard about jellyfish, but I'm on the East Coast, so maybe that's
why. Well, yeah, and I do wonder, because we hear a lot of things that aren't substantiated, so you tell us what is.
So I think that in general, when I talk to people about nutrition and brain health, there's a couple of messages that I think really are most supported by the science. The first is that we should eat a healthy, well-balanced diet, and that the diet that is generally good for our heart is good for our brains. So the most basic message is that we should eat a well-balanced diet that has a lot of fruits and vegetables, lean sources of protein, healthy sources of fats, and is sparing in sweets, and has whole grain carbohydrates to a certain amount. So that's like something we know already. That's the good news. We've heard this. Here's just another reason to follow that kind of prescription. The second thing is that when we look at specific diets, the one diet that across numerous studies has been most associated with protecting our brains over the long term is something called a Mediterranean diet. And that diet is really exactly what I just said, but the emphasis there is a lot on a lot of dark green kind of fruits and dark green vegetables, bright colored fruits, tomatoes, and also monounsaturated fatty acids. So fatty acids that come to us from oils like olive oil, from olives themselves, or from nuts. Then the other thing, if we want to go a step further, is to look to get into our diet foods that have things in them that have been associated with maintaining better brain health. And what comes to my mind specifically for that are foods that are high in omega-3 fatty acids. So those are mostly cold water fish, which you have a lot of out there in Seattle, right?
We certainly do.
Salmon in particular is a fish that is very high in omega-3 fatty acids. And there have been a number of studies that show that having a lot of omega-3 fatty acids in our diet may be protective to our brain health over the long term, including a very recent study out of Massachusetts that followed a large group of women over 8 years and found that those who had a lot of that omega-3 fatty acids in their system were less likely to develop memory loss over time. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing I would add to that is antioxidants, which we've also heard about in terms of healthy aging. Things like dark-colored berries like pomegranate, cranberry, blueberries, acai, and also dark leafy greens like the kale and the chard. Foods that are high in antioxidants have protective benefits in terms of protecting us from cell damage and some of the things that happen with aging and disease.
All right, sounds good. We know that certain medications can affect us too. What should we look at? And I know there's a vast, people are going to be affected very differently, but what should we look out for if we're taking medication and we think it might be impacting our brain function?
You know, I think one of the most solid pieces of advice that we offer in Your Best Brain ever have to do with kind of how we manage day-to-day lifestyle. And medications is a really big issue, and it becomes a much bigger issue as we grow older when we tend to be prescribed more medications. Medications may unintentionally lower our memory performance by making it harder for us in general to pay attention and to stay focused. So they interfere with our ability to learn. And there's classes of medications that have different impact on our memory and brain health. But, you know, specifically medications that might be for anxiety or for pain or for sleep are ones to watch out for, as well as certain medications that have to do with bladder control as well, which affect memory in a different way. What I like to tell people is that really it's a matter of taking more control of your medications and being aware that this is something that you should watch out for. And especially for those of us who are caretakers who have responsibility for or helping with someone who's older, it becomes especially an issue in older adults where there is a lot of multiple medications that they might be taking, and they might go to different specialists, and they don't always necessarily keep track of what they're taking. Mm-hmm. So a doctor might prescribe something that could negatively interact without knowing what someone else has prescribed or what they're taking over the counter. So the best advice is to keep a list of your medications, to talk on a regular basis, to check in with your doctor or your pharmacist about those drugs and about what they might be doing. That includes supplements and vitamins that you might be taking. And then to modify with their input, if possible, if some of those medicines might be having an impact.
Right. That was interesting that you mentioned bladder control medication impacts the memory. That's really interesting. You say that in the book that memory lapses are normal, but as we get older, we all go through it. I go through it. I go through it on air sometimes, live on air, and my brain goes blank. but what is normal and what should we be concerned about?
Right. So that's a great question because it's true. We all forget from time to time. And, you know, last week my 11-year-old was looking for something to take to school and my husband was looking for his car keys. And I was just looking at both of them and saying, you know, I talk about this all the time, but no one ever thinks about the fact that at 11 you still lose things, right? Our kids lose things all the time, but we don't think they have a memory problem. So forgetting is normal. It's a matter of understanding why we forget and doing what we can do to help ourselves remember better. So just as an example, for someone who might be, you know, constantly on the go and running and not, you know, sacrificing sleep, for example, to keep all their balls juggling in the air, sleep and lack of sleep has tremendous impact on our everyday performance. It's probably an issue that runs across all different age groups and impacts memory most significantly. So, you know, getting better control over those lifestyle issues is really important. But when should you worry, right? That's a different question. And the issue is really understanding the qualitative difference between the kinds of memory changes that are more kind of troubling and really should be evaluated and what's just day-to-day forgetfulness. And the things to look for are this. First of all, if the changes in your memory last over time, that's something that should raise a little bit of a red flag for you. So if those changes persist, say, over 6 months, that's significant. Also, if those memory changes are ones that your friends and family are commenting to you about or seem concerned about, that's something also to raise that red flag. And finally, and probably the most significant thing to look for is if those changes in your memory start to make it really more difficult for you to function effectively and well and the way that you used to at home or at work. So if you can't manage projects in the way that you used to, if you can't work your way through a recipe or follow, you know, directions to something, if you have more difficulty managing your finances in terms of calculating your checkbook balance or a tip, those are things to look out for. Now, that said, those are indicative that memory is a symptom, right? That there's a problem there that's
right.
A symptom. But memory loss is a symptom of many, many different things. Things such as a vitamin deficiency, like B12 deficiency, emotional distress, such as feeling depressed or anxious or overly stressed, or thyroid imbalance. So what is most important is to go see someone for a full evaluation.
Okay, very good. That's great advice. So you have some great tips in the book about how we can improve our ability to, for example, remember names and faces, recall important information. I want to look at a couple of the brain boosters that you share. And, you know, we've heard a lot about how playing board games or playing games online, doing puzzles can help boost our brain. I don't like doing any of those. So let's look at some alternatives. And one of them you say is be a planner. How does that, how does working with a calendar other than logging dates and planning, how does it help our brain?
You know, one of the things that I love about this work and about having had the chance to do the program and Your Best Brain Ever and work with National Geographic and Mike Sweeney on the science behind the program is that there's so much that we can all do, and you probably already do a lot, right, that is brain healthy. But there's things you might not like to do, like timed activities, and there's things that people do that we other people do, right, and we see how well they remember, but we don't do it ourselves, like being organized and using a calendar. So why do these activities matter and why do we have them in the book? Well, you need to do lots of different things to both sharpen your performance and keep your brain healthy. So among those things that we present are things like being organized. You know, people who are organized remember better because they have simply mastered the use of memory tools. And those memory tools include things like a calendar and a to-do list. So if we just set aside some time at the beginning of the week to set out our calendar and to be more mindful or planful about kind of reviewing what we have coming up, putting everything into a calendar, that organizational tool is going to help us remember that information better. And by the way, that's information that it doesn't pay to memorize because it changes all the time. You know, I'm sure your calendar changes all the time. I know that my clients' calendars change and my personal calendar changes on a regular basis, as does my grocery list and my to-do list. So writing those things down really make the difference. The other thing is that you say you don't like playing those games, so let me give you a different kind of tool.
Okay.
What really we're doing in those activities is playing against the clock. One of the things that we don't do enough of, I think, as we grow older especially, is challenge ourselves to play games against the clock. And the reason that's important is because when you look at what we kind of lose or what gets more challenged with age, it's the skills of attention, thinking quickly, processing speed, and thinking flexibly. We need to be able to do all those things to remember. So we think of it as a memory problem. People come to me and say, Dr. Green, I can't remember. They don't say my processing speed has slowed. But really, when we play games against the clock, we have to think, we have to pay attention, think quickly, and think flexibly to do well. And those are very critical skills to work out. So you probably have a cell phone. Yes?
I do.
Yes, and hopefully you know where it is, right?
Not right now.
Right, and most people listening probably have a cell phone. So one of the things that we can do, we don't have to play complicated video games. We don't have to sit with our kids and play some knock 'em sock 'em out game on the video console or something online. We can go on our cell phone and we can get a game on our cell phone that we play against the clock. And so while we're waiting at a red light or in a doctor's office or for some other kind of appointment, we can quickly play a game that challenges our attention, speed, and flexibility. It's just a small thing. It may not necessarily have the same benefit as getting, you know, super involved in a multiplayer virtual game, but it's going to give us a better brain boost than doing nothing.
Okay, sounds good. And we're almost right at the end of our segment here. You say that our senses need exercise too. We need to exercise our sense of touch, learn new scents, to exercise our smell. And also, I really like this, if we could end with this. You say, do something kind. Helping others has been shown to help our brains do something nice for someone today. Dr. Green, how does that happen?
So I like that one too, and I think one of the growing areas of brain science is really going to be more that social and emotional aspect. And, you know, when we engage in those kinds of activities, we connect with others. It gives us a way of being kind of also intellectually engaged, depending on what we're doing. And it provides social support and social context and connection. There was a very interesting study out of Chicago showing that people who had a greater sense of purpose were less likely to develop memory loss over time. And in that study, it was really sense of purpose was defined as, you know, having a reason for being here and feeling that there was intention to one's life. And so I just think that that's a really interesting and compelling thought. I think we'll see more studies in that area. But doing an act of kindness can help support that sense of purpose.
Yeah, I love that. I'd love to see us all do that. That's great. Dr. Cynthia Green, thank you so much. Great book, National Geographic, Your Best Brain Ever. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And that was an interview with, of course, Dr. Cynthia Green. I sat down with her a couple of weeks ago because of scheduling issues, so we could bring that to you. But this is a great book, and it's not one of those books you have to read from front to back. You can dive in at any page and just take a look. And the brain boosters that I talked about are little, for those who are on camera, are little breakouts here. You can just go on to into the book and just get a little tip here about how to boost your brain. But some of the tips we didn't have chance to cover are really simple things, because I really don't like playing games. And I know they always tell you, you know, that's one of the best things you can do, that and puzzles. And but some other things you can do are to wear your watch upside down. It's all about shaking up your brain. Wear an eye patch while you're cleaning house. That changes your perception, and put it on each different a different eye. Do chores by looking in a mirror, such as washing up. Put a mirror in front of you and just look in the mirror to get it done. What else? One of the other things was, I'm going to ask Eric in a minute, what's his favorite thing to do for relaxation and just to check out for a few minutes. But this is one of my favorite things. In fact, I did it this weekend, and I had really hurt my back, and I didn't think about it when I lay down on a bench. I lay flat down on this bench and wanted to watch the clouds for a few minutes. And of course, then I thought, oh gosh, I don't think I can get back up again. But they do say laying down and just watching the clouds for a few minutes. And of course, you can do that with a loved one, which makes it even more fun. And this is one of the big ones, and that is reaching out and reconnecting with people, because we all know that social isolation is not a good thing for us on any level. And hugging. Eric, are you a hugger?
Sure.
You are.
I'll always...
How come I don't get hugs every week?
I was just about to say, I always am happy to return a hug that is given to me. I don't presume that anybody wants a hug from me, but if they're willing to give one, I'm more than ready to return one. So.
Well, that's a good philosophy to have, because I have reached out to hug somebody and they've kind of pushed me away and say I prefer to shake hands.
Yeah, some people are sensitive about their space.
Yeah,
so.
But, well, you know, that comes from Southern California, because everybody hugs everybody down uh-huh. there. So, but yeah, I like to hug, and if there's no one around, I'll hug my dog.
I hug my dog and my cats, and you bet.
Anything else that you have?
Any animal I can find that's willing to accept a hug, I'm more than willing to give one.
Hey, watch out down there at South Sound. But that is one of the best ways to do it, and they say we should give a minimum of 5 per day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're out there and you're living alone, we don't recommend you just start walking around the streets of Seattle
randomly
hugging
people.
But this is really interesting, and this is why I wanted to bring this up. I saw on the news the other day, there's a guy in Seattle who will pay to cuddle you. Did you see that on the news?
No, I didn't. I've heard of the people that have signs that say free hugs sometimes,
well,
but I've never
charges.
Heard of someone actually. So he charges for hugs, or he pays for hugs?
He charges for
hugs.
Oh, okay. Now, I didn't go online and I mm-hmm. didn't look him up. I was watching the news and he was on a news clip and he gave the news reporter a hug for free.
But, gratis. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's promotional.
That's right.
Write that off on the taxes, no doubt.
But I guess he charges, I think it was between $30 and $60.
Now, those better be good hugs, because that's pretty steep. You know, normally hugs are free.
Then the story went on to say that there are people across America who do this. He said, this wasn't my idea. Mm-hmm. It's just a way of making money. And there are people across America who will, you go online and you can make an appointment with them for a cuddle.
Wow. Now, that's got to be like an organic, free-range cuddle if he's charging that top dollar like that.
I don't know. I think, you know, for me, hugs are spontaneous.
Yes.
And if you have to book an appointment, I think it would kind of lose some of the effect there.
Well, I guess there are certain people, you know, that just don't have anybody to cuddle with or hug with, and maybe that serves a purpose. I you know, they say that... just the act of laughing gives you the same endorphins if you're pretending to laugh than if you're really laughing.
It does.
Maybe even if you're hugging some creepy guy and paying $30, you're still getting those benefits that you would get if you were, you know, genuinely in a loving embrace with someone. So we can't judge.
We can't judge. Just putting it out there, folks.
If this radio thing falls through, I think I've got my new career.
There you go. Well, we've got to rush out of here. But if you need any more information on my guest today, Stephanie Collins' work, her book with Angel's Wings, or on Michael Sweeney and Dr. Cynthia Green's work and with National Geographic, Your Best Brain Ever, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net. We will see you next week with another great new topic. And until then, live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us. Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.